Welcome back to this second hour of Leading Edge Medicine. Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
Actually, Lynette Morgan has the day off today, as does Dr. Mixon, and we have special guest Dr. Michael Gilbert from Northwest Vision Institute sitting in with Dr. Umat.
Sweetheart, I love you.
And we have Charlie, who's going to...
Is that Charlie?
Charlie's going to pipe in with more questions about cataracts. Lots of vision questions today, as you might expect.
And Charlie's sweetheart in the background.
Yeah. There, if you have a question for the doctors today, call 206-421-5757. And Charlie was talking with us about cataract issues. And Charlie, why don't you continue?
Hi, Charlie.
Okay. So, Charlie, we were talking about the implants, and just before you refine your information to me, I want to share whatever decision you make. Number one, getting rid of a cataract, even with the basic most lens, if that's all we can afford, it's likely to be a radical improvement in your vision. So I never talk down about that. However, whatever lens you choose is the technology you will have almost certainly for the rest of your life. So I made the personal choice to have mine done in my 50s because I wanted my vision changed. And I knew whatever lens I chose was going to be there for the rest of my life. And so I chose the best technology that I could at that time. Technology continues to improve. So the advantages today, I was able to have one that fixed my astigmatism, but they did not have the technology that gave me the range of vision that I'm able to deliver now. By range of vision, I mean distance, as well as computer, as well as reading. So the technology continues to improve, and if it doesn't break the budget, whatever you get delivered with that implant is almost certainly going to last the rest of your life.
Sure. Okay. You're going to say something else?
Go ahead.
Well, the thing is, I've never had problems, a lot of people have problems, with the sun and things like that. I have no problem myself. I'm 65 or going to be 66. But I've never had any problems, driving with the sun or anything like that. Go ahead.
Most common symptoms are not glare with the sun, but rather night driving, which around here means winter driving. We were joking earlier that around here night driving starts about 3 o'clock in the afternoon come November, 2 o'clock if it's raining. So being a Seattle native, we all do, quote, dark night driving, especially those dark, rainy winter afternoons. And that, I find, is the most common place that patients will have symptoms from headlights. And if cataracts aren't bothering you, they're not doing any harm to the eye. But there is an interesting phenomena that the change, the gradual loss of vision and a gradual onset of symptoms, the brain is designed to learn to make micro adjustments and tolerate, to move on with your life and not sit there and complain about it. So I have many patients who are getting close to driver's license vision limits and saying, I'm fine, I'm just fine. But they're about to lose their license because they can't read the driver's license line. They don't notice. And that's the reason that post-op, patients say, I can't believe the colors. Mm. I can't believe the vision, the clarity. Right. It's and there's so much more light. And that's because they've been wearing gradually over years, have gradually lost quantity and quality and color separation of light.
Sure. From the sure. See, my wife, you know, we drive at night and at times. And the thing is, boy, because she's going to have the cataracts corrective lenses. The thing is, it just bugs the heck out of her because a lot of these people don't know they're supposed to dim their lights or anything like that. I don't know why, but I guess it's supposed to be the law. But it doesn't really bother me, you know, driving at night at my age. The thing is, my question was about the basic, is the basic lens, does every eye surgeon use that same basic lens?
No, there are different brands. But there is not a big, but to answer your original question, there's not a big quality difference between that basic most lens. Okay. There are multiple manufacturers. There are a couple of U.S. manufacturers and some international manufacturers. But there's not a big quality difference amongst them.
Okay. My next question is, my main question was whether or not the, we had the pre-op. And I asked the woman, she says that, is it possible that 20% of these cataract lens exchange, she says about 20% end up having a film. Is that your experience?
What you're talking is about is what's called a posterior capsule opacity, but it's normal anatomy. That membrane is intentionally left in place because it's important to the initial phase of healing. That membrane behind the implant, between the implant and the retina, that membrane can, over time, lose some of its clarity. The percentage varies depending on the research. Some studies show as high as 40% will end up with treatment. I've had mine lasered. It's very common to have it lasered. It turns out that the higher technology lenses are more sensitive, or those patients are more aware of subtle differences in their vision. So it's a little bit higher percentage to treat that membrane if you've had a better quality lens. That said, the treatment takes me on average about 15 seconds to laser that membrane. I've had it done myself. There's no recovery period, which is to say you notice the difference within 2 to 24 hours. And that membrane doesn't grow back. So I think if the membrane and statistical risk approaches zero, its treatment, if you're symptomatic in any way, is covered by insurance. So I think of that as a non-event, extremely low risk effects. In no way would it influence my decision personally to have the treatment.
Mm. Okay. The thing is, now, if she has these mites, okay, because she itches her eyes a lot. And do you get them from like a hotel pillows? I mean, where do they come from?
Yes, I knew we would get more questions on those mites.
So fortunately, I have never heard of nor seen Demodex be involved in a post-operative infection from cataract surgery. But if there is a heavy burden of blepharitis, whether it's bacterial or the amoeba, then, you know, that you'd want to treat that before the surgery. And I have a very high percentage of patients that I send to treatment that clears off all of that substrate so that the Demodex and all of that treatment is gone before I do surgery. The vast majority of my patients, I have that done in the office. So not trusting their own abilities to wipe away the mites, I actually have that done in the clinic before we do measurements. because those secretions can influence the quality of the measurements. And since I have a very high percentage of my patients choose the better quality lenses, I want the most precise measurements the most demanding of those ultimate results. And that comes from how the quality of the measurements as well as the quality of the implant and the surgery.
I see. The thing is, I'm into kind of natural things. That I would personally probably actually take pneumonia and put it on my eyelids if I had them.
So I think you mean ammonia, and I would strongly...
Don't get pneumonia. I heard pneumonia, and I go, what?
And there are a lot of chemicals that are natural that would destroy your vision for the rest of your life. So I'm going to encourage you not to put ammonia in your eye or such things.
Right.
You'll be pleased to hear that I have a number of relatively natural treatments that don't include $1,500 drugs. IPL won't kill it.
Mineral oil does not kill it?
No, sir.
Because
they live in grease and oil.
Oh, great.
The greasier your secretions from the natural glands, the happier they are. So mineral oil would not work. Ammonia would, but most likely. But I plead with you, please, not to try that.
Exactly. I wouldn't do it on my wife. But, have you ever heard of this?
Now that she's... I heard you saying goodbye to her. You assume she's not listening on the radio. I'd be careful, Charlie.
Well, no. The reason, when she sneezes, we came up with this a long time ago with my mother. The thing is, my mother would be sitting there at the table and having a cigarette, and she'd be leaning over the table, and the smoke would be going into her nose and mouth. Then she'd be sneezing and sneezing and sneezing. And so my wife finally said, God bless you, God bless you, God bless you, for the rest of the day. So that she didn't have to say it anymore. So when my wife starts sneezing, I do the same thing. So it's covered for the whole day.
So a couple of take-home messages. It is not hard to treat this disease. There are some ways to prevent it. And ammonia is not one of the treatments. Mineral oil is not one of the treatments. And God bless you, Charlie.
God bless you, too.
And the implant technologies, the vast majority of my patients elect those when they look at the options. And I think I always present it. I think it's not fair not to present all of the options to patients. And looking at the options and the lifelong impact to your vision, I think it's worthwhile.
Okay, thank you, Charlie, for your call. Hopefully that answers your question. We've got Sandra and Steve in Bellevue. When we come back from a break here in moments, that'll open up a line for you. 206-421-5757. This is Leading Edge Medicine from Longevity Medical Clinic. Back in a moment.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again. The life I love is making music with my friends.
And we are back on the radio again. Mark in for Lynette today. Dr. Mixon has the day off. We have Dr. Michael Gilbert from Northwest Vision Institute sitting in with Dr. Umat and taking your calls at 206-421-5757. We have a call about a wrinkle on the retina.
Ooh.
And Sandra, I think, has that question. And
morning, Sandra.
Dr. Umat could help you with wrinkles on the face.
Yeah.
Good morning.
Hi, Sandra. I don't want to know about face wrinkles.
I just a brief history. I've had cataract surgery on both eyes. I have dry macular in both eyes. But on my right eye, I have a retinal wrinkle. Which it does affect my driving because it makes straight lines have a curve. Mm. And I've been told about the surgery. I'm a little leery of it just because it sounds, I don't know. I was just wondering your opinion about it and how this progresses. I've also read that it could resolve itself, but that's probably unlikely.
Most of them don't resolve itself. So what happens is that there is multiple layers of the retina. The innermost layer is a membrane that, like Lycra, should be smooth, stretched, and uniform across the surface. But in some patients, that can increase tension for reasons enough that it causes distortion. And a little distortion is inconvenient, but at some point, as it progresses, if it progresses, it can lead to the point where that risk-benefit threshold is crossed and it's worth fixing. If it's affecting your driving, then I think it sounds like it's gotten to the point where it probably would be appropriate to consider surgery. Fortunately, today, risks of retina surgery have greatly reduced. Is it a guarantee that they're going to fix it? Retina surgery is exquisitely delicate. Imagine trying to fix wet tissue paper. It's hard to put back together. That membrane can be peeled off, but it is extremely delicate. And once you've peeled it off, the retina doesn't necessarily just zap right back into smooth contour. So most likely it stops the process. High likelihood that there's improvement, but it's a slow process and not without some risk. What would be the threshold? I think you've just described that threshold. If it's affecting your driving, then the longer you wait, the more severe it can get, and it decreases the chance that it will normalize when you do have that membrane removed.
So could she have had it for a while and not noticed it until she had the driving symptom?
Right. And so we pick it up in eye exams. We find that membrane, and it gives us, and there are now technologies that help us to very precisely track those membranes and their progression and alert patients. I regret there's not much you can do to stop them, right? The one thing we can do is peel the membrane off. My threshold for that is when it starts to affect your functional vision. Normally, if you've got one eye that doesn't have that and one eye that does, the brain does asymmetrical processing that will tend to emphasize the better quality image.
Right.
It doesn't do mixing, unlike the ear, where, you know, if you had static in out of one headphone, it would completely disrupt your ability to hear the music that you were trying to listen to. Whereas if there's a little distortion in one eye, the brain has a better ability to detune its emphasis of that and emphasize the better quality image.
Yeah. Okay.
But, and that allows people to do things like monovision, where one eye's distance, one eye's near. So it can suppress, when you're looking at distances, suppresses the near noise. Mm-hmm. When you're reading, it suppresses the distance noise. When you have enough distortion that it affects you, and so this is a somewhat individual sort of decision, but when it reaches the point where it's affecting your driving and you're unable to overwhelm it with the better eye, then I think it's time to look at that. And, you know, I would say 10, 20 years ago, the risk of the surgery was much, much higher. So we're at an age where I would not look forward to it. I'd say, ooh, there's some risk to this. But so also are there risks to driving with the current distortion, as well as the risk of further progression if we don't do it. So I think you're at that point where it's affecting you enough to justify doing that surgery.
What is the possible progression scenario for her?
It can continue to distort that central vision to the point where you're way below driver's license vision.
I see. Okay.
And what about retinal detachment? Is that's a little bit more, that's a risk, after the surgery, correct?
It is only because when you go in to do that surgery, you have to remove all of the gel that's on the inside of the eye. Right?
All of the gel
and peel off that membrane, which is specifically on the retina. So you have to go through the eye wall and into that back area, and so the retina is fully exposed. Every micron of that retina is participating in this surgery. That said, oftentimes the cause, this abnormal membrane, can be associated, the most common reason for it forming. Sometimes it can just happen spontaneously, bad luck, but it also can be associated with someone who has had a retinal tear, a retinal laser, prior retinal surgery or laser treatment. So if you've had any retinal treatments in the past, it greatly increases the long-term incidence. Even though the treatment was done way out in the periphery, the membrane forms right in the center of your vision. Seemingly, structurally unrelated, but it tends to occur in the most vulnerable part of the retina, which is the central vision.
Okay.
But fortunately, we do have a treatment. I'm sorry.
Yes. Oh, just recovery time. Time for surgery.
I think there are two components of that recovery. One is recovering from the surgery itself. And then if your real question about recovery is when do I get my best vision, that can be months. But getting back to your normal life is within a couple of weeks.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Of course.
Okay, thank you, Sandra.
Good luck.
And that opens up a line for you at 206-421-5757. We have Dr. Umat in studio today taking your questions, as well as Dr. Michael Gilbert. He, as you might expect, is from Northwest Vision Institute. And we have another question about eye issues with Steve in Bellevue. Steve, what's your question for the doctor?
Morning, Steve.
Hello, Steve.
Hi, Dr. Gilbert. I'm following up on the question about the membrane behind the contact before the retina that gets occluded or whatever. And so you have a laser process that takes it out.
Yes.
So I had my cataracts replaced, and now I'm discovering I'm having to use reading glasses.
Okay.
And so I suspect that's what it is. My real specific question is, I have monovision. So I had one of my contacts for reading, one for distance. So if I have the procedure, then I'll be able to read. Do I need to do it on the other eye for distance? And in conjunction with that, my insurance says it's $331. So I'm not cheap, but I'm frugal.
Very good. So multiple questions. Let me start first with just one subtlety to help with the other listeners who heard you use the word contact lens. But I think you're actually talking about implants. Because the laser that we're talking about.
Cataracts. That's exactly right.
You've had cataracts fixed and you were given implants. The implants that have been targeted one eye distance, one eye near, and now someone has told you or you're developing symptoms related to a decreasing quality of vision. And a common reason for that, the most common reason by far in that situation that you've just described, is a gradual clouding of that membrane. And one that sometimes can be increased glare from headlights. But in my case, I didn't have glare at night, but I was gradually becoming more dependent on glasses for reading. After my implant surgery, I go all day long without glasses and can read and see distance just fine. But I was starting to have to reach for readers. That was strange. So sure enough, the laser restores it. In answer to your question, that membrane degrades the quality of your vision, whether it's distance, computer, near, or one of the better technology lenses that gives you all three of those at the same time. So it really doesn't matter where that implant is targeted. If you have that membrane that is beginning to degrade the quality of the vision, it will do it at whatever the functional range is that implant serves. So the distance lens, you'll likely notice some degradation in the sharpest of your vision. It comes on slowly. So you may just notice it at night with halos or a glare around headlights. Your reading, you may find that you're having to reach for reading glasses more than you had before that membrane. For the more sophisticated lenses, it can happen at all of those distances or just some of them. But if you're having a change after you've had the implants, the most common reason would be that that membrane has lost some of its clarity. But the laser treatment is literally takes me about 15 seconds. Extremely low risk. It's covered by insurance, and I want to get back to your question about the 300. And recovery is essentially immediate. The 300, I don't understand.
Shall we come back?
Sure.
Yeah, we'll continue with your question here, Steve, in just a moment. Call in your questions for Dr. Gilbert or Dr. Umat at 206-421-5757. This is Leading Edge Medicine, brought to you, of course, by Longevity Medical Clinics. We'll return in just a moment. Back with more Leading Edge Medicine. It's so easy to call in your questions right now at 206-421-5757. Dr. Umat with us today. Dr. Mixon has the day off. Lynette has the day off. And Dr. Michael Gilbert fielding lots of questions about eyes and different issues with vision and continuing to talk
with Steve.
With Steve. Yeah. And Steve, continue with your question.
So, Steve, I know one of your questions. I hope I've answered the medical part. Frankly, that's my expertise and my passion. You asked me a financial question, not my expertise nor passion, but obviously, I have some experience with it, both as a consumer and as a physician. Just to start, I'll share with you that, and I remind patients that I am a government-controlled utility. And as a small government conservative, which is why Dr. Mixon and I get along, as a small government conservative, I had never considered the notion that I would not have pricing freedom as a physician.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter my quality or lack thereof, I get paid exactly the same as everyone else on that same insurance program.
Right.
And the insurance companies set those fees. So, very good. That is the way that system works. Now, I don't know what the $300 is. My guess is you're telling me about your copay, which at any one particular time of the year for an individual could be part of your deductible, because I know my deductible now is so large that I usually have paid the entirety of my deductible, so the insurance takes over everything somewhere in late November, early December. So
when it's time to start the new year.
When it's about to start over again. I think we all have those higher deductible plans. And even Medicare has some options, but that include deductibles that can lead long into the year. So my guess is that's the deductible because there are, everything is a deductible and a copay until you've come to the your particular insurance plan. So every insurance plan is going to be a little bit different. Medicare does set fees, as do the commercial insurers, and it's according to your policy how much that copay is. In terms of this particular laser, once it's done, it almost certainly would never need to be repeated. So this is a once-in-a-lifetime thing. Putting it off doesn't make it better, nor does it make it more expensive. So I would have it done early. You're not going to avoid having it done. And once done, There's less energy if you do it earlier, so it just cuts down on the risk and the side effect symptoms, which can be floaters. Floaters are the most common thing that can happen afterwards, so you do have less of that if we do it early. And it's not going to change the cost. Everything in life goes up, doesn't go down.
Okay, very good. So I'm going to just clarify one question that I have, and that is, so both eyes theoretically are experiencing the same occlusion or whatever, but I'm noticing in my reading
symmetrical.
Means it's in both eyes,
yes.
Regardless, huh?
Yes.
Okay.
But if you're not symptomatic, you don't have to have the laser. So you are symptomatic for near. Definitely have that done. Personally, yeah. I'd be inclined to do both. But if, you know, sometimes I have seen very asymmetric haze and symptoms. And in those patients, we just treat one eye. Eventually, you will most likely have the other eye treated. But that doesn't mean we need to do it at the same time.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
Very good.
Thank you, Dr. Gilbert.
Yes, sir. My pleasure. Good luck to you.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Steve. That opens up a line. Nobody on the phone at the moment. If you want to get in a quick call, 206-421-5757. And Dr. Michael Gilbert is with Northwest Vision Institute. You can find out more about his services at nwvision.com. Lots of questions today about eye issues, Dr. Gilbert. And in our previous show, you guys were talking about quite a bit about how different drugs affect vision as well. I don't know if that's what you want to talk about now. Or what.
Sure. That'd be a good topic to talk about, Mark. You know, the one class of drugs that has become very popular in the recent months and years is the GLP-1 agonist. And they were first used for diabetes management. And with the use of them for diabetic patients and for type 2 diabetes, the impact on weight loss was quite significant. And so they became very popular as weight loss drugs. And so a new class of drugs came out that are actually a little bit better for weight loss and management of obesity. And the obvious reason for managing that is because of the huge impact that obesity has on people's health. Not only does it increase the risk for type 2 diabetes and hypertension, but it also increases risk for coronary artery disease, dementia, degenerative joint disease, inflammation, and so on. The list just goes on and on, cancer being one of the big things too. So when you're thinking about this as a medical problem, then you need to treat it as a medical problem and not leave the patient to manage it on their own by reducing caloric intake and increasing physical activity. That is not successful, obviously, and these class of drugs have been very successful in helping patients. And the mechanism of action is basically by just stopping the food noise in the brain, and people just don't feel hungry. They feel full faster. They eat less. And then if they manage that with a good lifestyle and a good diet, they're very successful in their weight loss journey. We do monitor for side effects. Obviously, the drugs do have a lot of side effects, and some of them are quite significant. But then so is the impact of not doing anything. And so we deal with the benefits and the side effects. But one of the new things that we wanted to mention, and Dr. Gilbert has seen this in his office, and we were talking about it on one of the breaks, is the impact on eye health. And something that people may not notice, but with the better control of the diabetes and the sugar, long-term impact on the eyes will be well too. But if you are noticing some vision changes, it might be time to go see the doctor to find out what's going on.
Two major things. One is just something to know about. The other is really important to detect. So the one that would be good to know about is that anytime you have new treatment that influences blood glucose, the treatment for diabetes, whether it's oral medication, insulin changes, it alters the blood glucose, which influences the shape of the natural lens. This would not apply to someone who has had, we've been talking about implants today. It doesn't affect the implant functionality, so those people would not be affected. But the change in prescription can be significant, So after you've started a regimen, once it's reached steady state, probably within a month, certainly 6-8 weeks, it would be a reasonable thing. If you notice any subtle changes in your vision, even if you haven't noticed, it might be a good idea to get your prescription, your vision checked, because the change in blood glucose can also affect the shape of the lens, which means your prescription's changed.
Yeah.
What is medically more important is, number one, in treating a better treatment of diabetes is very important for long-term health of the retina. Diabetic retinopathy used to be a major cause of blindness in the United States, and the percentage of that is decreasing because of major efforts to try and improve long-term diabetic care. But one thing that has not come to attention, as it has just more recently with this group of drugs, is a sudden control can throw off that diabetic retinopathy and actually make it short-term worse.
Okay.
So it's a good idea to have the retina checked. If you've been putting that off, make sure that someone's looked at your retina, especially if you've started, changed your treatments.
Right. All right. We can come back and talk more about this. The music.
Music is doing its thing. And we need to take a quick break here. Dr. Michael Gilbert, our special guest doctor today, he'll continue that thought, and we'll take a call from Joe in Mount Lake Terrace when we come back. This is Leading Edge Medicine, brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinics. Back in moments. With more of Leading Edge Medicine today with Dr. Umat and Dr. Michael Gilbert in. Dr. Mixon has the day off enjoying this sunshine. And we would like to answer one more question this morning in our final segment from Joe in Mount Lake Terrace. Joe, what's your question for the doctors?
Yes, I'm calling on behalf of a friend of mine. He's a 60-year-old man, and he's just been diagnosed with polymyalgic
rheumatica, yeah, which, PMR.
Mm-hmm. Which I've never heard of before, but I went on Dr. Google and found a website about it. They have prescribed him some steroids.
Yeah.
And I just heard the other day, here's the tie-in, one of the consequences of it may be blindness. So I'm wondering if you could educate me a little bit more about PMR.
Sure, be happy to. You know, this is a medical condition that presents suddenly in many cases. Sometimes it can be slow and progressive, but it is an inflammatory condition. And patients present with weakness in the proximal muscle groups. By that I mean that they have weakness in the shoulder group, in the hip group, so that the proximal muscle weakness is the prominent impact. And basically, there's a lot of pain, and they have difficulty in doing range of motion. It's really quite debilitating. I have treated these patients in when I was physical medicine and rehab, and actually have managed some during my longevity years as well. And it's very painful. It really impacts on activity, and it impacts on function. Did your friend get it suddenly, or did he have, like, just aches and pains, and then he was finally diagnosed with PMR?
I think it falls more into the sudden category.
Yeah. So they do believe that there might be an autoimmune component to this drug, but honestly, the first thing to do once you present with it, and did he have, like, both the shoulders and the upper legs involved, or just one area involved?
I think so, yes.
Yeah. So when it's systemic like that, affecting both the arms and both the legs, it's difficult to stand up. It's difficult to move the shoulders. Yeah. It's very painful. The immediate treatment to do is use high doses of steroids. And then we reduce the dose of the medication as the patient starts to get better. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. we recognize that steroids come with their own problems, and high doses of steroids predispose patients to diabetes, avascular necrosis, and long-term problems. And so you have to treat the immediate condition and then slowly wean the patient off to get them off of the medication. Dr. Gilbert, have you seen the sudden eye problems that he's talking about with steroids?
As you said, so steroids steroids cause cataracts,
yeah.
But that's the least of the problems when you're treating a whole body inflammatory disease,
autoimmune condition,
like this. And the real risk to vision is not the cataracts. That's easily treated, and whether that's caused by inflammation or more commonly from the steroids, the real risk of PMR is the vasculitis that can be, because it's a whole body inflammation,
right.
And that includes the vascular system.
Right.
And so the risk for blindness that he was referring to is typically from arteritis. So temporal arteritis can be associated with sudden and pretty dramatic permanent loss of vision.
Right. And there, too, the treatment is high doses of steroids very quickly.
High doses of steroids,
yes,
right.
Very quickly, yeah.
So steroids are still the answer, and the hope is that the treatment of the underlying disease is improved to the point where it prevents the vasculitis that puts the vision at risk.
Right. So, you know, he has to have the medication to control the underlying drug. Yeah. And then I had a patient that it took us 2 to 3 years to slowly lower the dose of the steroid. But you can't go too fast, because if you go too fast, then there's a recurrence of the vasculitis, which becomes very hard to manage again.
Right. With treatment of steroid and inflammation, there's a phenomenon called rebound.
Yeah.
So that if you happen to taper just a little too fast, you get back, you know, you've lost major ground, because the bounce back is oftentimes worse than where you were.
Right, right.
So his time on steroids will be measured in months.
Yes.
Maybe even years.
That's right. But
okay.
the dose will continue to decrease over time.
Right.
Depends on how he responds.
It's not days or weeks. It'll be months or years.
It usually will be months. Days, and the high dose will be tapered. They won't keep him on the very high dose for very long because of its side effect profile.
Mm-hmm.
And as his symptoms improve, they will continue to lower the dose. But taking him off of the drug will take a lot longer.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for that.
Absolutely. And in the meantime, you know, as he tolerates more range of motion and strengthening, it will be helpful for him.
Yeah. Okay. He is physically fit.
So, good.
And I think he's been losing weight.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Joe.
Yes. You're welcome. Good luck to your friend, Joe.
Thank you for calling today.
Yes.
And we have just a few minutes left in the show today. And Dr. Umat, you wanted to remind us about something coming up.
Gallery is the name of the company.
Gallery, okay.
Yeah. And what they do is basically what we call a liquid biopsy. It's 50 cancers detected on one blood sample. So that's the beauty about the test, early detection of cancer that can literally be life-changing and life-transforming. So 50 different tests for 50 different types of cancers, and that's the Gallery is the name of the company. And so we do that for non-longevity patients on September 14th, 9 to 1, by appointment only, in all three clinics.
Kirkland, Tacoma, and Linwood. And you still also offer the free tests as well, don't you?
Yes, absolutely. Analysis. Yes. Yeah. If you have not ever done that and you want to do that with us, you can do the blood draw for the longevity blood panel, which will allow you to meet with a physician for 1 hour to go over your test results. That will cost you $595. The Gallery test price has been lowered from $1,250 to $995. And then you have 1 hour physician time to go over your test results. And then if you choose to do the longevity panel, then we will give you a bottle of foundations which Dr. Mixon created as a multivitamin for health and wellness.
Okay, that's happening on September 14th for the Galleri test in all three locations, Kirkland, Tacoma, and Linwood. And they can't just show up for that.
Correct. Well, we have to plan for blood draw. So we have phlebotomy. We have staff in place. So we do need to know that you're coming. You don't have to fast for this test, but we do want to know that you're coming so that we can, plan it and have appropriate team members available.
Okay, schedule that appointment if you're listening today at 866-86-YOUNG. That's 866-86-9684. You can also schedule your appointment at lmclinic.com. And Dr. Michael Gilbert, you also have a website. What is that?
nwnorthwestvision.com.
nwvision.com. And a phone number?
425-450-2020.
Okay, so a wonderful program today. Lots of information. A lot of people struggling with vision issues. Is that just because people are living longer or on so many different drugs? Or what's going on?
So I think it's a combination of exactly that. We're living longer and our visual demands are increasing. We're driving longer and in more challenging environments. And our expectations are growing faster than our ability to cure disease.
Yeah, well, screen time
is a
big culprit, right?
And huge amount of screen time that actually does permanent damage to the gland system that most people aren't aware is happening until they come in and I point it out to them and I say, look at this.
Yeah.
Okay, wonderful show today, Leading Edge Medicine. Mark Holland been filling in for
Lynette. Oh, and Beautiful You. Don't forget Beautiful
You. Yes, Beautiful You is Dr. Umat. She'll be back in about an hour here on KVI. Listen for that show. It's on every Saturday from the 1 o'clock to 2 o'clock hours. So wonderful shows, wonderful content to help you with your health issues. Longevity Medical Clinic, again.